Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
Family law attorneys, judges, we all kind of shudder when we hear it's a relocation case. And that's because there's no easy solution.
Yeah, this is not one of those where you can just split the difference or there's some gray area where in negotiation you can go, well, you're, you know, $200 apart. Let's just go $100 each and, you know. I mean, it's either the child is living near you or the child is living far away from you.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Today's episode is relocation, relocation, relocation. How to move away with your children in divorce. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So we wanted to do a show about relocation cases or move-aways, depending on where you live. They call them different things. But it's a case where you have shared parenting of minor children, and then one of the parents wants to move away with the children to a place that's different and separate apart from the other parent, something different. It's usually with some distance. And I swear, this is one of the most difficult issues that comes up in family law cases. I think family law attorneys, judges, we all kind of shudder when we hear it's a relocation case. And that's because there's no easy solution.
Yeah, this is not one of those where you can just split the difference or there's some gray area where in negotiation you can go, well, you're, you know, $200 apart. Let's just go $100 each. And, you know, I mean, it's either the child is living near you or the child is living far away from you. And that's the part that makes it really, really difficult.
Yeah. And it really engenders fear. And the thing I always say to my client who comes to me when they want to move, when they're the one who wants to move with the children away, when they can't understand why their ex is being, I'm going to use their phrase, unreasonable about it. Can't they see this is so great? But I always tell them, you know, how would you feel if your children were moving away from you? You know, put yourself in the other's shoes for a minute and at least understand, I think, the fear that's raised for one parent. You know, I had one client say to me that he was afraid he was going to be marginalized, that his children would think of him as an important parent anymore.
That's a huge, a very, very valid concern. And I just want to mention that a lot of the states do have a mile radius that they actually spell out what as to what relocation or move away means. I know Susan did say some distance, but usually there's a distance. In Florida, it's 50 miles, and it's kind of funny because it's as the crow flies, which is sort of a weird way to look at it.
Yeah.
But
forgetting about traffic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I actually had a case one time where the traffic was so bad between where one of the parents wanted to move to and where the other parent wanted to go. It was kind of like a double move away case in a weird way, but the time on the airplane was actually less than the time that was going to be spent sitting in the car in traffic.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Some traffic is, we had that when I was living and practicing in California. In Fairfield County, the traffic was so bad during rush hour that they actually changed the law. And it used to have a distance. It used to have a certain number of miles that the move away had to be. And they changed it to any distance that significantly impacts the current existing parenting plan.
Because well, that makes sense. Yeah. That certainly makes sense here in California because, I mean, I live in LA where it's like, you know, if you're going somewhere at 2 a.m, it might take 20 minutes. But it's 7 o'clock. It may take, you know, 3 hours. Who knows?
Yeah. Chicago's no better. Trust me. Yeah. So, but that's often the move away. I mean, I've had the move away cases where it's, I want to move a couple of towns away, or I want to move to the other side of the state. And those present one raft of problems because you usually are talking about now transporting the children in a car, and you do deal with issues of traffic and just how long they have to sit in that car and who's going to do the driving. But the really, really significantly difficult ones are, you know, where people are moving miles, thousands of miles away, cross country.
Well, the farther away, the harder it is, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if it's a 3-hour car ride, you can meet in the middle a lot of times on Friday nights, or at least, you know, the other parent has the ability, the non-moving parent has the ability to get to that place maybe and watch a baseball game or go to a school play or something like that, you know, if it's a couple of hours in the car. If it's, you know, a plane ride away, that's a whole other ball game. It's a whole other issue.
Yeah, well, it's a plane ride, it's a hotel room, it's a rental car, it's, you know, is significant costs associated with that cross-country travel. Even if it's, you know, just a few states away, it still, presents a much more significant impact on the time and the availability of that parent to just be with the kids.
Yeah, and I've done quite a lot of relocation trials. And I have to say, I've been fortunate, knock on wood, I've actually never lost one. I just did one in November. We just got the ruling back in February or March of this year. And it's never any easier. They take a tremendous amount of time. They're actually very costly to try, because they're extremely fact-driven. So you have to present lots and lots and lots of types of facts. You're basically comparing the current place to the next place, the place where the person wants to move to. And so in looking at comparing those two places, they're going to look at lots and lots of factors, including school and medical and all that sort of thing. But the main driver is going to be what kind of relationship can be preserved between the child or children and the non-moving parent.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that the court is always going to be looking at as their the overriding factor, and then all of these other factors sort of layer in on top of it. But if you're going in and trying to convince a court to let you move away, you better have a decent plan in mind that you're proposing for the other parent to be able to see the kids. And realize, you know, one of the things that inherent in what Rebecca was just saying is relocation trials, those cases do not happen quickly. So, like, I had a lady contact me just a couple of days ago and said that she wanted to schedule a mediation session because she wanted to move at the end of the month and she needed to get her ex-husband to agree to that. And so she needed to get this session scheduled right away. And I, you know, she had not even broached the subject with her ex-husband that she wanted to move 6 states away. It was, you know, 1,500-mile move. And she thought we were going to get that finished by the end of the month, put into a written agreement and put in front of a judge.
only if he's willing to agree immediately.
I suspect since she hadn't even told him yet,
we weren't moving on that fast track.
You know, honestly, you know, I've had several relocation cases. I would say the most successful ones and the only ones that went what I'll call rather quickly, they were negotiated over a few months, were cases where the parent that wanted to move was willing to make considerable concessions, either on the financial side or combining financial with that parenting plan, and were willing to do things. I had one woman who moved from Connecticut to here in Chicago, actually, and she once a month would fly back at her own cost with her child to Connecticut, and she would stay with family, and her daughter was then able to stay with her father, and then she paid for the father to fly out to Chicago every other weekend.
Yes. So
other weekends. But she paid for all of that by agreement.
So that's a good point. One of the things that the court will look at is what are the travel expenses going to be, and do the parties have the ability to absorb those travel expenses? And or does the moving party have the ability to do that? And is that moving party willing to be on the hook for those expenses? Because, you know, it's kind of an unknown. You know, you never know when you're going in to book a flight exactly how much it's going to be. It may be a range if you're doing it. And yes, you can rack up points if you're traveling enough. But part of it is also how old the child is. Because, you know, if the child is three, you're not sticking them on an airplane by themselves. Somebody's going to have to fly with that child. And even when they get to be eight or nine, and they're allowed to fly unattended as long as you pay for the airline to accompany the child. Not every parent really wants to do that. I mean, you know, I've had people say to me, "I'm afraid. What happens if the plane gets grounded or something, or they have to end up landing in another city, and now my child is with some stranger?" You know, I mean, even if you think that you're getting a direct flight, it may not necessarily be direct. There's a lot of things that can happen. So, but that's one of the things the court will consider is the travel.
No, absolutely. And you know, in that scenario, think about the trauma the child goes through with a flight that, you know, gets canceled. I just had it happen to me a couple of weeks ago where a flight I was supposed to take, I was sitting in the airport, got canceled after several, you know, hours. And that would be, what, an 8-year-old, 9-year-old child sitting in an airport, not really understanding. So there's a lot that goes into the whole, you know, idea of taking a child and making the child go back and forth to parents.
Well, and
is
I had
it the
a
parents?
Judge.
Yeah.
Right. I had a judge one time say they didn't want the kid on the airplane because of all of the germs, you know, those woman who wanted to, actually, she had moved from Florida to Connecticut and now wanted to relocate again from Connecticut to California. And I was representing the husband, the former husband, back in Florida. And he was like, "Hey, if you're moving from Connecticut, then you might as well, the child might as well be relocated back to Florida." And we won that because, well, part of the reason, by the way, is that the judge looked at the stability of the mother and her life. You know, she had moved up to Connecticut to follow one boyfriend, and now she was moving to California to follow another boyfriend, which she said she was marrying him and all of that. But the judge was like, "Hey, you know, the dad is still living in the same house that he owns, that the kid was born into, that you stripped him from when you took him up to Connecticut in the first place. And, you know, it seems like the dad actually has a more stable life." So that's one of the things the judge looked at.
Yeah, well, and that stability for children is, even in the first round, that's something that judges will look at in, you know, is it a good idea to take the child out of their current environment? And there can be factors that are in each child's individual case that can be significant in those scenarios. Something like a child with special needs who is in a special school or a special program or has a therapist that they work very well with, that is something that's going to weigh heavily into that judge's idea of what is in that child's best interests. I've seen that time and time again.
Yeah, I actually, the trial that I just did in November, the child had epilepsy, and he had been working with a particular pediatric neurologist who had actually gotten the child to the point where he was no longer having any more seizures. And you know, and the wife's argument was that she should be able to move because the whole life there that they had already established in Florida could be replicated in the state that she wanted to move to. And, you know, our argument was, well, who knows if it can be replicated or not? I mean, that's a huge risk when he's already thriving here and he's already with a doctor, you know, and he had a condition that's not normal for a child. I mean, you know, how many children have epilepsy? It's not, it's, you know, fairly rare. And the fact that he was thriving meant a lot to the judge.
Yeah, I think judges will really take something like that in as a significant factor, because with any child related issue that's being adjudicated in a court, the best interest of the child is something that the court is either going to solely be looking at, or in at least in all cases, it's a significant factor in making the determination. And not all of the reasons why parents want to move are in a child's best interest automatically. You know, most people coming to an attorney, you know, the things that I hear are like the one you just talked about, Rebecca. My boyfriend is moving to Albuquerque, and so I want to move to Albuquerque. Well, that's nice for you. Is that the right thing for your child? Or, the other reasons are my job. I can get a better job there. I can do something more there. Well, that again may be good for you, and maybe the trickle down financially is good for your child, but is that enough to make it worth taking that child away from their other parent on that, you know, ongoing basis? It's not necessarily, I always hear from a client, and you probably hear this, Rebecca, where the client goes, oh, well, I'll let him or I'll let her have the kids on school breaks and for a month in the summer. And that's equals roughly the same amount of time that they would have had them if we were still living in the same place. But that's a very, very different type of contact with your children when you only see them for a week and then you don't see them for 2 months, or you see them for a month and you don't see them for 3 months or something like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I think really changed the whole landscape is of this whole thing is, you know, years ago when I first started practicing law, it was pretty common that, you know, the mother would get most of the time sharing and the father would maybe get every other weekend and dinner or an overnight maybe on Tuesdays or something. It was really pretty normal standard parenting plan.
Yeah.
But nowadays that you see much more of the 50-50 thing going on, it's much more, you're going to have to really kind of prove to the judge that, you know, taking this child away from the possibility of the other parent being involved on a daily basis is going to be in that child's best interests.
We're going to take a quick break now to talk about our newest sponsor, Hello Divorce. Divorce is hard enough on its own. You're thrown into the legal system. You have no idea what you're doing. Hello Divorce understands that, and they offer an affordable, convenient online option for Californians. Easy form preparation, instant access to legal information, loads of articles, affordable, convenient, and low-stress divorce.
One of the things I love the most about Hello Divorce is the sheer number of options that it gives you. When you sign up for your free account, you get access to their curated library of tools and resources, and you also get a 15-minute free personalized divorce strategy session. They have a do-it-yourself option for divorce, but they also have an option that gives you your own legal document assistant who will handle your entire divorce start to finish for you. You can even hire the a la carte services of an attorney. Just to make sure you're on track, without having to pay an expensive retainer, you can purchase increments of time in as little as 30 minutes. So find out more at hellodivorce.com and be sure to let them know you heard about it at Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast.
Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on relocation, relocation, relocation. How to move away with your kids in divorce.
And there is another great cross-examination question, and expect to get it if you have a decent lawyer on the other side. And that is, if you're not allowed to move and you move, or the child's not allowed to move and you move anyway, will this parenting plan be good enough for you? Will this be enough time sharing for you?
Yeah, there's a mind blower.
Of course, most of the time the answer is no.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including Lion Tamer, 5 ways to tell if your spouse is lying, with New York Times bestselling author and internationally renowned body language expert, Janine Driver.
So there's several here. I know this is going to sound strange, but I know you think I'm making this up, but I know you think I'm lying, but I know you're going to think I'm not telling the truth, but so pay. I say liars, we're watching your big butts. Attention to the butts.
And now we return to today's show.
You know, another reason I've seen people want to move is because they have a much more robust support system in another location, in another state. You know, say where I had a case where they had moved to Connecticut while they were married because the husband got a job there, but her family was back in California. And so when they divorced, she said, I don't really have anyone here in Connecticut. I want to go to California. It's where my mother is. It's where my child's grandparents are. It's where my extended family and friends are. I have, you know, built-in childcare. I have a place for us to stay while we transition. And they felt that, you know, having this continuous contact now with their extended family was, you know, of such importance, and their having a support system was of such importance that it justified taking the child away from the other parent. That isn't what the judge ultimately decided in the end of that case. But that was, you know, that was the reason and the main reason for wanting to move in that case, a support system. And that is something that a judge will take into consideration. In that case, that was not enough.
Yeah, they will definitely take that into consideration. But, you know, there the cross-examination writes itself, by the way. Oh, so you think that your relationship, the child's relationship with your family, is more important than the relationship with dad.
Yeah. Oh, you heard me in that trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, and the other thing, by the way, that you mentioned, and I wanted to go back because that's a good cross-examination question too. You had mentioned, make sure that you have a proposed parenting plan that the judge is going to think is good enough for the parent who's not moving. And there is another great cross-examination question, and expect to get it if you have a decent lawyer on the other side. And that is, if you're not allowed to move and you move, or the child's not allowed to move and you move anyway, will this parenting plan be good enough for you? Will this be enough time sharing for you?
Yeah, there's a mind blower.
Of course, most of the time the answer is no.
No, I would never take a week in the summer and, you know,
exactly.
Spring break.
So be really careful when you're crafting that plan. You know, I mean, I had a case one time where the woman, I was representing the wife, and she was studying to be a teacher, and she actually wanted to move to Michigan. And in mediation, we ended up settling the relocation case because the mediator turned to her and said, you know, you're studying to be a teacher, and if you win relocation at trial, then that means the second that you have off, the kids will be gone. Because if you have them all during the school year, then that means he's going to get them for all of the vacations, all of the holidays, because that's the only time he's going to get. And she thought about that and thought, oh, no, I don't want that. And so she chose to stay.
Yeah, because ultimately that's what it does come down to, is for many parents, I've had cases sort of go away, I'll say, as we go through the litigation process, getting ready for a relocation trial. And as we're moving down that road, and the reality of either having to make concessions on large chunks of time where the children are going to be away from them, because now that's the only time, as you said, that they can be with the other parent. So you lose a lot of your summer time with the kids. You lose a lot of your school breaks with the kids, holidays, because that's all that other parent has. You know, the kids can only go to them when they're available, when they're not going to be harmed by being taken out of school. And then parents start to get that realization, the one who wants to move, well, wait a minute. Now I'm not going to have most of my holidays with my children or have them nearby where I can share those holidays. And a lot of their spring, summer, you know, vacation is going to be off at the other parents. They're going to be gone for 2 months at a time or something like that. And I've had people backtrack as well and say, you know what, maybe moving isn't the right conclusion for this family.
Yeah. So another thing that they look at is they will compare the school system, depending on how old the children are. But if the children are of school age, they will take a look at what's the quality of the school where the child already is, and what's the quality of the school where they're going. And what they look at is like if there's a school grade, if there's a student teacher ratio, the diversity involved. You know, some parents actually think more diversity is actually better. You know, so it kind of just depends on the judge in that sense. But you will want to present evidence on the current school system versus the one where you want to go.
Yeah, but inherent in that, and this is a difficulty that comes up all the time as well in relocation cases, is you're faced with, if you're the one who wants to move, you are faced with identifying where you're going with some specificity. You know, where you expect to be living, what school district your children will be going to. But most people have some financial difficulty going and buying a house in another location without knowing that the court's going to let them move with their children. So you're in limbo being asked to provide. So all you can really say, unless you have the financial wherewithal to go and buy another house and say it's in this school district, this is the house, this is what it looks like, these are the rooms the children are going to have, the school's, you know, 6 feet across the street, that sort of thing. You're presenting this is what we anticipate doing, because you can't do it during the trial until you know how the judge is going to rule.
Yeah, that's another chicken and egg thing. And there's another one, and that's the job situation, because, you know, as you mentioned, having a good job will help sometimes, especially if it really, I caution people, because you better make sure that those same opportunities aren't available in the place where you're already living. It has to be something fairly unique that, you know, you got a job in this area, you can only do it in that area, or, you know, or this is a rare type of job and there's not that many available, and here's where you got the offer. And it's so much more money, and it's going to really, really raise your standard of living. But here's the crazy thing. Like, you can even attach a job offer to the petition in Florida to show, look, I have a job offer. But how long is that employer going to hold that job offer open? I mean, because it could take a year before you get to trial. And now, by the way, that particular job offer letter is hearsay unless you get the person who signed it to come into court, which would be your prospective boss, which is kind of a crazy thing, right? Unless you want to, you know, have your prospective boss deposed ahead of time somehow or something. I mean, it's really a weird chicken and egg thing with jobs and also houses and schools.
Yeah, and that's more of that, it puts you in limbo because you don't know if you can move. So it becomes very difficult to plan ahead. And, you know, to one of Rebecca's strengths, the negotiating, you know, I'm sure she would tell you, and this is the dynamic I see, if you have a pending job offer with a time limit on it, that gives the other side a great, you know, leverage, a great negotiating tool. Oh, sure, I'll let you move with the kids, but here's what I want. And, you know, that becomes something that gets taken into consideration. So, yes, you have to reveal the job offer and, oh, it's great and this is wonderful. But then they also know that you really want that job. You really want to be able to move. What are you willing to give for that?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird balancing act, because the other parent, you know, the only thing you can really offer them is some kind of financial thing. I mean, and so, you know, the other parent is now put in a position of, you know, was I willing to be bought, you know, in exchange for less time with my children or something like that. And most parents won't. I have seen where, you know, the non-moving parent maybe has a really crazy work schedule or something where it actually worked better for them to go ahead and allow the relocation to take place in exchange for, hey, you pay for the travel for the kids or, you know, whatever, something like that.
Yeah, I've seen, I mean, I'm not sure how it reflects on people, but I have had cases where I've called it buying your freedom or buying your ability to relocate has been successful. You know, one of the things is paying for all the travel or something like that, but forgiving an obligation that the other side might have been obligated to pay pursuant to your divorce decree. I have seen that come up. I have seen.
Or not having to pay fees when maybe they might have been on the hook for your fees.
Yeah. I mean, if there are obligations outstanding still under your divorce decree that the other party feels they can be released from in exchange, but still negotiate a deal where they're going to see the children and they can live with it, that has worked.
Yeah. The one thing I want to mention is that any type of prenuptial or postnuptial agreement that would include, oh, I'm allowed to relocate with the kids is not going to be upheld. Because anything with regard to children that's done way in advance, where the court doesn't have the opportunity to determine what's in the best interest of the child or the children, it's not going to be upheld.
Yeah, you can't pre-negotiate your children's best interests. They are always going to be subject to, you can put something in those agreements about your intent, but that doesn't mean a judge is going to follow it. If they feel that what you agreed to 5 years ago when you did your prenup is not in your children's best interest. So clients often will insist on putting clauses about children into prenuptial agreements, despite the warnings that they're not going to be upheld. But have you ever seen a judge really take that into consideration at the time of the enforcement of a prenup?
No, I actually, in Florida, it's kind of a weird thing because the relocation statute allows for relocation if there's a written agreement. And so I actually had a client who had signed a postnuptial agreement when the child was like 2 months old or something like that, and it allowed her to relocate. Well, when she went to go relocate, the child was like five. So she was waving this postnuptial agreement around like, hey, I get to relocate. And the judge said, no, I still have to do a best interest analysis. So even though the statute allowed for a written agreement, inherent in that was it seemed to be like it had to be contemporaneous with the move. And number two, even if there's a written agreement, inherent in that is both parties continue to agree. Because if one person says, no, I don't agree anymore, if they raise their hand and say no, now the court's coming in to do the best interest analysis.
Yeah. And you know, I've seen that with judges more often than not. They're never going to err on the side of not worrying or not making sure that something's in the best interest of the children. So if you have any time that's passed between entering into the agreement and looking at the situation then, and when you're in front of a judge asking them to determine it, they're going to do an all new analysis.
Absolutely.
Of the situation.
I do want to mention that, because we're about out of time, but I want to say that we, as part of Breaking Free Mediation and Coaching, are available to help coach through a relocation issue. This is something that's very fact-driven, and it's something that Susan and I both have a lot of experience with, and it's a good opportunity to hire a coach just to get some strategy and information.
Yeah, I think one of the things you can tell or understand from what we've been talking about today is that a relocation case is most often successful either when it's negotiated. So you have to sit down and be able to put something on the table that the other parent's going to be able to live with, or you have to be prepared for a very long, often a year or more, and very expensive court battle. So having some strategy and sitting with a coach who understands the issues facing you and can help you pull it together hopefully come up with a plan and a proposal to put out there that's going to be able to be negotiated is often going to help you get to where you want to be, which is, you know, your new location.
Definitely. Creating that leverage, that's the most important piece. You know, if you want to incentivize the other side to settle, you got to create some leverage.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.